Barnes. 9 times out of 10, telling me stuff I didn't know. But I was talking to the break. He knew some of it, not all of it. So I was trying to read him in during a 2-minute break. I already did this the first hour, second hour. It's so big. Remember, I'm Tomorrow's News Today. But I know talking points. I know CIA planted stuff when I see it. And I'm not for it. But they repealed it back in 2012. And in these shows on Newsmax, Fox, all over, they go, the CIA Smith Mundt Act, legalized under Obama, the CIA lying to you. Well, there's a bad element in the CIA, but the good CIA has come to us and explained that there's a bad element trying to stage a coup. That's why they're saying Trump, needs to be dealt with these false orders. And then here's how they're setting it up. And the mere fact, for the first time, I think, ever in modern history, other than you mentioned Colby, who they killed, we are, I guess you're right, they had the former director do it once. You have the elements of the CIA openly outing the CIA publicly, and they're saying it. The problem is they're saying it in clear English, but unless you study this, you don't know what you're hearing. And I don't think the public understands what they're hearing. So there's a lot of facets about the history of the CIA fighting with itself. This is the biggest time of it out in the open. And Colby, and then now the issue of why we've moved to that point, that's a very good sign from Trump. That's a lot to unpack, but Barnes.
Well, yeah, I mean, the person is trying to take this all apart by piece. And remember, some of Kennedy's family is also there at CIA, or the kid that was part of the deal. So that there's white hats connected to Robert Kennedy who are there. And then there's all the good work being done by Tulsi Gabbard and Joe Kent. I know some other people that are real reformers who came in with them. And so what they're trying to do is within the intelligence infrastructure, recast it and recreate it and recraft it to actually be representative of American values rather than anti-American globalist values, which is what it's become and what it's been now.
And the first thing it would do would be expose the agency from within.
Absolutely. You have to do that. You have to. This was the great work. And somebody like Eldridge Colby being Under Secretary of Defense when his grandfather was the only other guy to ever out the criminality of the CIA. And he was a lifelong Cold Warrior. Bill Colby was like behind the lines in World War II, up in Finland and all the rest. So he was just an honest guy.
When they were starting to move against America, that's when they went public and they killed him.
Exactly. Yeah, he disclosed the family jewels. They were and who was it that organized the conspiracy against him and blacklisted him? Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Poppy Bush, all the way back then when they were working with Ford. And so, this is an old standing, you might say, a family. And then remember Robert Kennedy, his father, killed by these folks. His uncle, President John Kennedy, killed by these folks. So you've got, personal issues tied in with political issues. So you got people with the right motivations to clean up these institutions who are at an inside war to do so. And that you got the white hats and the black hats, and it's happening day to day to day in the administration. And at times, Trump is aware and awake. At times, he's put back into the bubble by Swampy Susie and Soros Scotty and Narco Marco and that crew. But people forget, Bill Colby, he disclosed the so-called family jewels, MK Ultra, the assassinations, all the rest, because he thought that was the CIA acting in excess of its lawful authority. This guy was an old labor lawyer back in the day. So he was a true Cold Warrior because of his political beliefs and religious orientation and deeply anti-communist, but he was not in favor of becoming like communists in order to defeat communists. And his grandson is a chip off the old block. He's the one trying to reform the military as we speak. He's the one trying to bring back the Pentagon to focus on the continental United States and away from all this other stuff and away from getting into conflicts in Europe and conflicts in Asia and conflicts in Africa and conflicts in the Middle East. He understands we need to reorient. So good faith actors are trying to do good things, but they're going to need continued support from those of us outside the official political establishment in order to give them enough support in the court of public opinion to be the backstop they absolutely have to have in order to be able to achieve these successes that they're on pace to do.
And again, folks, you'll never see what we're talking about in the news spelled out like this, but it's not even science. It's a fact that on a scale of exposing the CIA, this is much bigger than what Colby even began to do. And this is clearly the direction of Trump going on. So Trump is really starting to get traction, which we've been begging him to do. He's got to get ahead of the Podesta plan and the plan for a civil war. We'll come back and talk about that straight ahead with Robert. We are live, still on air, despite all the admissions of the CIA, the FBI, the DOJ, hundreds of millions of dollars spent trying to shut us down. But despite that, because you, the activist audience in the arena, stood with us with your word of mouth, your prayer, and your financial support, we have not only persevered, we have not only overcome, but we have dominated.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com today.
The spirit of victory lives in InfoWars. And InfoWars is more than a URL. It is more than this building. It is the people of America and the world becoming awake and standing up and rising and demanding liberty and freedom in the animating contest in the war against the tyrants.
From the InfoWars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
You keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but confess. You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin'. And now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing, and you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a changing.
And I just got a brand new box of matches.
Now what's right is right, but you ain't.
So I don't say something unless I absolutely believe it and know it. And we're kicking the globalist asses. They can try to slow things down. They can probably get us a nuclear war and us all killed, but that's about it. So Robert Barnes, pulling back from this before I had some other domestic issues with you, and I appreciate your time. Great historian, great lawyer, good friend. Let's look as a constitutional lawyer at those senators, House members, CIA operatives in the video last week saying Trump, and with authority, you got to listen to us, we're CIA, we're military, he's going to give you illegal orders, he's been giving you illegal orders. They don't say that, but they couch it like that. And that's to have so dissension, mutiny. But that alone, I think you'll agree, is not a crime. Trump then sees it, responds to that. He's been briefed on the larger Podesta plan, the Civil War plan that's public, that is sedition, a plan to have the blue states secede, a plan to cause a race war. That is a blueprint official plan. The governor of California says he endorses it. He's getting ready to run for president. Swallowswell's moving in, the shiny spot to be governor. It's that compendium of Crossfire Hurricane and all the rest of it, the Arctic Frost. It's all part of the same arc, admittedly. And so who produced that? Who came to you with the script? The crime is not them trying to cause the mutiny. It's the premeditatedness of the plan to cause the mutiny. And so, oh, the FBI is investigating it. And, oh, the Defense Department, that statement. And Todd Blanche said, well, we're going to see the intent of that statement. Well, even if the intent was for mutiny, they could say that's my First Amendment right. We think he's a tyrant. So there's a setup there that they're only looking at that statement and not the arc of all of it as the larger admitted insurrection, seditious conspiracy, treason operation. So we have to really address that. A, do you agree with that? And B, what should the real response to this be? And what does it mean that they're now bringing this forward at this time?
Yeah, I think you absolutely nailed it. I mean, this is protected speech in terms of what they said. It's the context that gives a potential criminal application, and that the right approach would have been for Trump not to say anything about it, but it included an investigative referral to the Southern District of Florida, already looking at all the other Russiagate deep state conspiracies, and simply add that to it, because the question is, was there conduct that was meant to sabotage seditiously the president of the United States to sow the possibility of military dissension and later civil war. And my guess is that would be there. You're talking about CIA Slutkin. There was one of the senators doing it. You know, CCP Kelly, also doing it. You know, these kind of bad faith rogue actors who are constantly putting in their back pocket, if Trump doesn't play ball with the deep state, they'll take him out whenever it's convenient to do so. And the only risk factor in all of this is that what's going on in Venezuela, I'm not sure that the military is always being given accurate intel. That at least in a couple of these cases, what happens if it wasn't drug dealers? That may be an issue down the road. Trump should be careful about
exactly.
Who's giving
the
him
bad
advice.
Elements of the CIA could give them an innocent boat, or once we go in, we could be in a new Vietnam and set up. Whereas I agree with the reasons of regime change. It's in our hemisphere. Thomas Jefferson would go after for what they did. He was not an interventionist, basically an isolationist. But he broke that with his Barbary War One. But exactly in overall morality, I understand regime change, which I'm not normally for, but in execution, I don't think we should do it because it's a trap.
Exactly. And it turns out it's a dual-level trap. What I heard from some high-ranking people in D.C. this past week is that the whole goal isn't even Venezuela. It's toppling Cuba. That it's because Venezuela is the prime source of all the cheap energy that Cuba needs to keep its fragile, fractured economy afoot. That was even more deeply fractured during COVID. And then the latest hurricane put him in extreme distress, that without the Venezuelan cheap energy, the economy would completely collapse. And they don't think a post-Fidel Cuba regime will hold on. And Narco Marco will get his ultimate Cuban dream of driving in Havana and freeing Cuba. But he's willing to risk all of President Trump's foreign policy in order to do so. He's willing to risk our troops being dragged down in Venezuela for doing so. As some people like to say, Venezuela is Spanish for Vietnam. You know, it's even bigger than Vietnam as a country. Geography and topography can be just as troublesome. You got all those left-wing guerrillas and right-wing guerrillas and all the cocaine different competitors in Venezuela. So everything about that screams nightmare. And Maduro was like, hey, President Trump, I'll give you the whole thing. I'll give you all the oil. I'll give you all the emeralds. I'll give you all the rare earth, all the wind you want. And Rubio was like, no. Because Rubio isn't out that. Rubio wants to prevent Venezuela from being able to aid Cuba. And he thinks the only way to do that is to force Maduro out. And he wants a civil war in Venezuela so that Venezuela is incapable of supporting Cuba.
Well, by the way, so that's not even debated by the Pentagon. They admit it's meant to take down Cuba, cut off China into Panama Canal, and then the junior partner of Venezuela is Mexico. So actually get that larger reason, but the problem is it's bigger than Texas, like you said, and most analysts say it will destroy the country, and that's immoral, like destroying Iraq and killing millions to get Saddam. It just breaks with what Trump said. Now, that's why Maduro's now offered to leave and then, quote, have free and fair elections. I know the CIA doesn't want pure regime changes. They launder the money, and they're basically the client above China, from my sources, or at least elements of it. They want to put the security chief in and, quote, have fair elections, just remove Maduro and kind of keep it going as is. I think that's why Trump sided with Rubio, saying no, clean break.
And the other problem is what the globalists want with this is they want the chaos of Venezuela to unleash another mass wave of immigration into the United States. And they want to say, see, Americans, you look at these poor little refugees from this conflict, from this terrible narco-terrorist regime. Don't you have to let them in? Another 5 million, another 8 million, another 10 million. Can't be busy with those deportations. We got to let these humanitarian causes in to fill up those voter rolls and to fill up those labor rolls. So that's the other bad faith action that's behind all of this. Remember, Narco Marco was part of the group that was trying to do immigration deals in 2014. So he has a long history of actually being pro-open borders. He's not somebody that's actually anti-immigration. It's purely rhetoric. It's purely a fig leaf for show. So I think the problem is they're trying to walk President Trump into a trap. The one trap in Europe, another trap in the Middle East, and now a third trap in Venezuela. So hopefully the president can navigate, negotiate out of it. He's starting to get his spidey senses up that something is not quite right with what everybody is trying to pitch him. He recognizes the best deal to do is get a deal with Maduro done, get it written down, you're better off from a Trump perspective with Maduro still there to honor the deal. So honor the deal so we can get access to secure oil supply, secure rare earth supply, so that we're no longer dependent on China. That's a way to do that without risking a civil war.
Sure, but how does the U.S. enforce that? I mean, how does Maduro follow his agreement?
Because they keep Maduro there. And as long as Maduro realizes I get to stay in power as long as I honor this deal, then he has shown his full capacity. Like, I think we thought he was a lot weaker politically than it's turned out he actually is. That the assumptions because there's been multiple efforts over the last 6 months to try to stage coups, to try to get internal dissension, to try to get all the rest, and none of it's worked. Because he has stabilized the situation politically in Venezuela for his own personal benefit. But that means he's someone we can deal with, and you keep him in play in order to protect the resources. And then you don't have a risk of civil war, because what the globalists want is a civil war in Venezuela. They don't want regime change in Venezuela. They want a civil war in Venezuela, because the civil war will unleash the massive migration into the United States that they want. So the civil war will drag down U.S. troops and further embarrass and undermine the president's MAGA agenda. So it's a goal to end as long as the civil war.
So what's your prediction? We're not going to go in. This is just maximum pressure to get to the mega deal.
Correct. Yes. I think President Trump is realizing it. Tulsi Gabbard has told him that. I think he'll take Tulsi's advice. He'll stay out of he won't let Venezuela become his own Vietnam.
All right, moving into domestic stuff, the 12 minutes we have left, and I appreciate your time. The Democrats, lowest approval rating ever, lowest fundraising ever, and their election frauds being exposed everywhere. I talked to White House sources that were in the meetings. Good things to say about Susie Wiles, that task force he set up 6-7 months ago with that executive order brought back evidence out of China through Taiwan, Venezuela, of the voting machine fraud, of the cell phone chips in it, which I've seen before, and we've had high-level CIA whistleblowers on it, including one joining us, I think, Friday. So that's a positive thing happening right there. But the Democrats know that people are turning against them. I know then they're trying to finance taking legitimate criticism of Trump and saying we're done with Trump, try to fracture the movement. They take clips of me out of context constantly, all the top Democrat shows, and play it everywhere, going, well, you don't trust us, but trust Alex Jones. But people see through that. We have to thread the needle of criticism of Trump to get him back on the right track versus it being used to bring down MAGA when we know the Democrats are, 100 times worse with their problems and their open evil. So I guess the larger question is, what is the real lay of the land? How much danger is MAGA in right now? I know CNN has this one host that, is basically pro-Trump, and most of what he says is true. But, yeah, we know Trump's base is constant. 80-something% support. We're talking about the new voters, the swing voters, the never voters that helped take him over the top. That's where he's lost half his support. And if you look at the numbers with all the baked-in fraud to override the illegal alien vote, we need the new voter or swing voter or Democrat crossover voter to win. That's the real political analysis, folks, from all the experts. And so there's this MAGA thing of white-pilling. Shut up, Jones. We're going to win the midterms. Don't say that. Well, Roger Stone told me a month before the elections 2020, he said, Trump's going to lose. He goes, he's really going to win, but the landslide won't be as big. They got 10% fraud baked in, but don't tell the public that. I don't want to demoralize them. We got to go on air and tell them it's very close. And he said, no. He goes, emblematically, it's the Q thing. He goes, it's not just them, but, Hillary's in Gitmo. They've executed the Clintons. The New World Order's done. We're invincible. Trillion D-chess. And because of stuff like that, total delusion, get your popcorn, sit back, everything's fine, they were able to steal it. So we need to have Trump engaging the base, moving forward, pointing out he's the underdog, and getting aggressive with the deep state. That's what people want. And so here's a clip, though, CNN. Oh, everything's fine. Everything's fine. Trump's winning. No, he's eroding his key swing vote that got him over the top. Here it is.
Is the president losing Republicans?
No. Look, this is still Donald Trump's Republican Party, and we can see it here. It's like a rock, to quote Bob Seger. I mean, take a look here. Republicans who approve of Trump. 6 months ago, it was 87%. Now, well, hello, it's the same number. It's 87%. He has not lost any support among Republicans compared to 6 months ago. As I said at the beginning, he's like a rock. The Republican base, is sticking by Donald Trump at this point in time.
It really is interesting to watch his overall approval rating go down, 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 but see this be completely constant here.
It is among independents. It is not among Republicans.
Okay, so how does this compare to past presidents in a second term?
Yeah, okay, I think this gives the game away, right? Which is Donald Trump, if you look at 21st century presidents, own party approval at this point in term two, who leads the pack? It's Donald John Trump. 87% of Republicans approve of Donald John Trump. You go back to 2013, 78% of Democrats supported Barack Obama, and it was 78% of Republicans who supported George W. Bush back in 2005 at this point. So Donald Trump has the biggest own party, highest own party approval of any president who served their entire second term in the 21st century.
You could look at this one of two ways. You could say, obviously, he's doing way better than past presidents. Or you could say, there is still room to settle. If there is a reversion to the mean here, if that does fall further, that could chip into his overall approval rating. Okay, Marjorie Taylor Greene resigning from Congress in January. One of the concerns is that Donald Trump backed someone in a primary against her. How has Donald Trump done in his congressional endorsements?
You know, when you go up against Donald Trump, you're going up.
All right, so here's the deal, folks. Back then, the parties basically just gave it to one or the other. Trump has to have way higher numbers because he has to override fraud. As we said, at least 10% on average, which you see he has there. No margin of error, no margin of loss hits when he's the swing voters. So when people look at this, they don't understand that they're coming with even more fraud if we don't reform this system. And the Democrats have said they're going to come screaming down on top of everybody. So people, again, it's not a normal election cycle. This is an existential threat, in my view. Barnes, is that accurate?
Absolutely. The thing that's changed is independents are now the biggest voter group in the country. In the past, the parties dominated, not anymore. Like, you looked at the average InfoWars supporter, they identify as independent, not as a partisan Republican. And so that's where looking at the partisan Republican numbers really don't tell you much. What you want to know is, how are independents doing? And the independents are about 40% of the country. And there are three different groups that Trump got within the independent vote. One was the libertarian-leaning independent vote, people represented by the Rand Pauls, the Thomas Massies, the Ron Pauls, etc., the Dave Smiths, you name it. Then you had the what I call OG MAGA. These were the independent working-class voters from the industrial and rural Midwest who are deeply anti-war, who want to rebuild American industry, who want control of our
borders. That's why you saw unions for the first time going for Trump, and then you've got RFK.
Exactly. And then the third group is what I call new MAGA, which RFK helped bring in, which Tulsi Gabbard helped bring in. And who are they? These are people that are deeply anti-war. They're young. They're millennials. They're minorities. They're Zoomers. They're disproportionately Hispanic and Black, but not exclusive, and Asian, but not exclusively so at all. They're just disproportionately young. They're people who don't like Israel. There are people who don't like us being involved in foreign war. And there are people who want to see more action. More, they're the salty crackers of the world. They want to see real accountability from the deep state. They want to see the scaffoldings lined up around Washington, D.C. You know, that's their mindset. That's their mentality. So they don't like all this donor focus. And the problem is, to the degree President Trump allows Narco Marco to run his foreign policy and allows Soros Scotty to run his economic policy and lets Swampy Susie run his domestic policy, then he will be out of touch with all of those three voter groups, and his support will collapse, and the midterms will be a disaster, a bloodbath. Not only will Democrats sweep the House, they will also win the Senate in places like Iowa and Ohio, and will shock a lot of normie Republicans. So that's his great risk. He's
and
got
the good
to
news
pull
is,
back.
Mitchell said that 2 weeks ago. They summoned him there for a three-hour meeting. But like you said, it was Vance brought him there. Thank God for Vance, man. Wow.
Oh, no doubt. Vance is doing everything possible to shift the messaging, shift the policy focus, shift the foreign policy focus. But what we're seeing is, like in Ukraine, that, you know, if he would stick with Vance's plan, he can get us out of there. If he lets Narco Marco hijack it, we're going to be stuck there. If he, same with on economic policy, if he listens to what Vance is proposing on affordability, on housing, on immigration, on those focal points, then he can get back a lot of those voters. If he lets Soros Scotty tell him, hey, everything's great, we're in the golden era, everything's booming, then he's going to look like he's as out of touch as Joe Biden. And so, and if he lets Swampy,
he's got to be out showing the good things he did and the success on energy and eggs and a few things, and going in and busting up the meatpacking monopoly, and explain it. People want honesty, not just golden, plated everything. Exactly. That is the worst messaging. What's she do about Epstein?
He should disclose it all. Don't allow this to get dragged out any further. Disclose it all. It exonerates him. It incriminates his adversaries. So get it out there over the holidays. Do not let this bleed out. Do not let there be follow-up subpoenas and follow-up summonses and follow-up impeachments and follow-up investigations. Whatever you do not let you bleed out over a year by letting little piece out, little piece out, little piece out, little piece out. Just get rid of it. Get it out, get it out, get it out. In the same capacity, embrace food freedom, financial freedom, political freedom, medical freedom. Soros Scotty's telling me he can't fire Jerome Powell. Hogwash. If he can't fire Jerome Powell, then the Fed is unconstitutional, as some of us have long said. Fire the Fed. Audit the Fed. Audit Fort Knox. Audit the CIA. Audit the Defense Department.
Bring Elon back. Bring Doge back.
Yeah, absolutely bring Doge back. Soros Scotty stopped and stepped in and wouldn't let Doge go to Fort Knox, to the Fed, to the CIA, to the Federal Reserve. And that's why we didn't get the information we needed. We know there's all kinds of skeletons hidden in those agencies and institutions.
And by the way, that was the most popular thing Trump was doing. That's his highest approval ratings ever, was Doge era.
Exactly, because these young kids want to see the system burn. That's their mindset. That's why 1 out of 10 Mamdani voters voted for Trump in 2024. People need to process that bit of information. That's why Trump was buddy-buddy with him in the White House. But Trump doesn't understand. It's because they want to see it all burn. So they want to see the deep state destroyed.
Explain that. Fourth turning is the biggest mega turning ever in history. These are facts. They're not fiction. We've talked about it for decades. Trump, you're the revolutionary. You're the underdog. In reality, you are, but the messaging is not corporate CEOs. It's the people.
Exactly. He was elected to be a revolutionary, not to caretake the system, not to hold up the system, not to be like Roosevelt and salvage the system, but to tear it down. He was there to be like our founding father.
You just said it. Like Trump's Washington. Trying to be Roosevelt. That he doesn't. That no.
Exactly. He needs to be more like what Kennedy was starting to be before they assassinated him. He needs to be like the revolutionary Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and Thomas Paine and Andrew Jackson were. Andrew Jackson, nobly standing up against the central bank. He's got to do the same thing against the Fed. Make it Trump versus Fed, Trump versus Big Ag, Trump versus Big Pharma. Don't be in the bed with Big Pharma.
I've co-opted them. They're doing what I want. And really, it's sometimes a little better, but not much. No.
They don't want to see Borla in the White House with another dinner. They don't want to. If Borla's there, they want to see him going to the scaffolding outside the Oval Office.
We don't want to see four dinners with Bill Gates.
Exactly. They want
Bill
Gates. By the
way, I don't like it, but every time it happens, my phone, the show is flooded because I'm just like the listeners. I'm upset. My exact instinct, boom, the audience is like, what is this?
And Swampy Susie thinks that his job is to be the corporate caretaker to keep the institution going, to keep the empire afloat and alive just a little bit longer when this empire is a vampire that needs a stake right through its heart. And if Trump will do that, be the revolutionary his instincts scream out to be, that his American voters elected him to be, then he can be the transformative president all of us want him to be.
Incredible. Barnes, thanks for the hour and a half. Closing comments. We've got about a minute.
President Trump has great opportunities. Everybody out there should stay active, stay engaged. Don't be discouraged. Don't be disengaged. Remember even Marjorie Taylor Greene in her resignation saying now is not the time to be disengaged. It's just she's choosing a different platform and mechanism and means of engagement. So we should do the same. The greatest trick the devil ever pulled is convincing people he doesn't exist. The greatest trick the system ever pulled is convincing you that you cannot resist. So remember, your voice matters. Vice President Vance depends on your voice, and he's looking for reform and remedy and exit from the war in Ukraine. The DNI Gabbard needs your voice, and she's trying to reform and restructure the entire intelligence industry. Eldridge Colby needs your voice, and he's trying to restructure our military to defend ourselves, not a bunch of foreign nations. These people all need your voice to be active in the court of public opinion, to be engaged in the court of public opinion, because in fact, you can change the world. They ain't censoring you because your voice doesn't matter. They know how much it does matter.
And there's General Flynn. There is no 5D chess being played. Everyone needs to understand that. What you see is what you get. Absolutely. There is a battle over the future. Any white pillar telling you whatever Trump says is an idiot. They don't want you to be engaged. Robert Barnes, incredible job. Talk to you soon. God bless.
God bless.
Massive news straight ahead. I'm Alex Jones. Share the live feeds. Paul Revere's. You are beyond insane if you don't support us. If you don't support this broadcast, I mean, I'm being honest. It's like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. It's like going into the Sahara Desert without a canteen of water. It's like sticking your wiener, you know, in somebody that's got 14 diseases without a condom. Sorry for the gross thing. The point is, shouldn't do it anyway. The point is that I need your support. And I'm only going to sell you stuff that works really great. Like I said, I've opened a restaurant to be the best food, best prices, best atmosphere, quality, service, because I want you to come in 1,000 times. I want a relationship with you. The products are insane. Ultramethylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, the bovine colostrum, not a sexy name, but what it does for your hair, skin, and whole body, everything else is insanely good. We got the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesShore.com right now, running until Friday. Black Friday comes early. Buy any supplement. You can buy a supplement that costs $20 and then get a $40 supplement for free. It's not just buy one, get another free of the same thing. We've done that quite a few times. This is buy any supplement, get any other one free. All the new designs, all the new apparel in, the biggest selection of Patriot apparel in the world. Now 670-something designs, ball caps, you name it. 25% off on all that and a bunch of other insane sales. If you're a VIP, you get $40 to spend in the store each month. Special deals, special offers. Anybody, anything should be a VIP. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Cry havoc and let loose the dogs of war. Share the live feeds.
What are you looking at? Do you have a problem?
You are the backers of this operation. You are the InfoWar. So go now to InfoWarStore.com, where we got probably the final shipment of the highest quality fish oil and the highest quality turmeric, Body's Ultimate Turmeric, 95% cumin. Those are both 40% off. I want to thank you all for your past support, but you've invested in this operation. It's paid off in global awakening. It's been so incredible. Thank you so much for being at the heart of this operation. So as all of our family members in the InfoWar, all of our team members, all of the emissaries, all the ambassadors of freedom against the globalists, that now at the thick of the battle, as you see it peaking and peaking and peaking, just as I've said, I don't come out here and talk about civil war and their plans for insurrection and their plans for military coups just to sound scary. And then now they're openly calling for it. U.S. senators, members of Congress, CIA, because we're beating them. And it's the last move they've got. We're also going to add a link at InfoWarsStore.com today. You can make straight donations on there so that we get all the money and we can get past the shortfall. So I don't want to spend our valuable time on this.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. From enemies, foreign and domestic, it's Alex Jones.
I really appreciate attorney investigator Joseph McBride joining us right at the tip of the spear in this, along with Carl Serafin. And Carl Serafin joins us now. I mean, here's what it comes down to. I was there. I've been covering it for 4.5, 5 years. We know it was a Fed insurrection. We know it was a setup. And it was supposed to be way worse. Then you got these pipe bombs and you've got, you know, the police now and the new footage out. We already had a lot of that before, treating it like it wasn't even a real bomb. Now they go right where they're at. This is a big deal, because if you bring this out and if it turns out up the chain of command who gave these orders, this brings down the whole system. So I want to go back to Joseph McBride here in a moment, but Kyle Serafin, who I twist his arm to come on with us right now, you said weeks ago when this information from the Blaze came out, investigative reports, it was this cab police officer who's now CIA. They're like, oh, no, you know, it's not her. You said, no, it's another government cover-up. That just points to the current FBI that's continuing this on. But now with this new information coming out, it being picked up even by mainstream news, bombshell twist, potential CIA link to pipe bomb mystery since shockwaves through the probe, this is not going away. Just like saying Epstein killed himself and all of that, this is a big deal. So, Kyle Serafin, you got all the different details. You do great at picking everything apart, but big picture, this thing is falling apart right now for the establishment.
All right. So the big picture is, real simply, two Capitol Police officers who were part of the counter-surveillance unit were dispatched to go find any other explosives that may have been left. For people to understand the timeline, the first one was found behind the RNC or the Capitol Hill Club. So that's pipe bomb number one. And they said, well, let's go look for and make sure there's not another bomb out there. They sent out a series of police officers from Capitol Police, and they were sent out in pairs. One of those pairs parked at the Capitol South Metro Station, went directly to the same exact bush, the only bush that that they could have gone to, where the previous night a pipe bomber had been 77 seconds sitting on the ground. So as people watch this footage, this is what's called person of interest number one, the hooded figure, the pipe bomber, who walks up to a bush and sits there. What you're seeing on the screen right now on the top right-hand side is that bush in the daylight. You're seeing on the left-hand side a blown-up picture of it, and then in the middle or on the right-hand side, you have the actual size of the footage. The pipe bomber, the hooded figure, dropped down, eventually sat down by this bush for about 77 seconds and seems to be rummaging through a backpack and attempts to place something underneath that bush. It's not the greatest footage, but it is what it is. What happens later on is two Capitol Police officers park their car, which they drove lights and sirens to get to. They park at the metro station. They walk directly to that bush and they go past it and they look under it. Then they wait a few seconds. Then they walk past it and look under it again. Like, where is it? It's supposed to be there. Then they retrace their steps and end up at the exact place where the pipe bomb actually was found. And in under 12 minutes from being deployed completely randomly in Washington, D.C., they found the bomb. That's the first look right there. That's your counter-surveillance unit on the screen. They walk past it. They go and they end up behind the signage there. You can see that there's a like a traffic signal. And so they're blocked off on the left-hand side just above where the flashing lights are. They're going to wait a few more seconds. They kind of take a pause and then they go look. And you're going to see in a blown-up image, one of these two ends up looking not just at the bush, but under the bush, cocks his head, stops completely, and is like, where is this thing? Now, the belief is by the guys who are doing this investigation that the original placement of this particular pipe bomb was a break. The pipe bomber set it down there and it broke. There he goes and looks again. And there you see the inset on the footage. And if it broke right there, then it was actually recovered by the pipe bomber, put back in a backpack, walked over to its final resting place at the DNC, and that's where it went. There's an infographic that went along with this, but this is literally years now of an internet investigator and the folks over at the Blaze doing this work, tracking this person, first the pipe bomber, and then following, well, where the hell are those guys that went and found it? And how long did it take them to do it? I would say that if you could find a pipe bomb in Washington, D.C. that's randomly under a random bush or sitting next to a park bench in under 12 minutes, you should replace the canines. You're better than anybody. And so this—
well, I was about to say, for radio listeners, they don't see it, and I've been to the area. It's bushes and park-type stuff everywhere. So it's like just randomly, yeah. You just walk over, and she'd first been there and then leave, so you go to the first spot. Then they check, oh, it's over here, and randomly walk like bloodhounds right to where it's at.
That's exactly right. And the question is, and I put it out online, and of course, people are not stupid. The audience gets it. You put it on social media and you say, well, how do they know where to look? How do they know what bush to go to? And Alex, everybody just goes, well, they read the ops plan. So that's the answer, that they were in on some of this. The question has always been, how do you connect Capitol Police? Because this was the big problem with the story that they had when Steve Baker went out and announced the name of a Capitol Police officer named Shawnee Kirkhoff. They said, well, how do you connect Capitol Police to it in the first place? You connect it because Capitol Police officers found the bombs and they went directly to that bush. Of all the bushes in all the world, in all of Washington, D.C., they went to that one right away like bloodhounds, as you said, and then turned away once they realized, like after a second look, it wasn't there. They turned away and then went directly to it. And it's under 12 minutes. It's like 11 minutes and 40 seconds or something. They were able to find this thing. That's not only statistically improbable. I would say it's impossible. Having worked in counter-surveillance stuff, walking around in Washington, D.C., there are bushes everywhere. As you said, this is a nice place. They're all landscaped. So all of that is crazy. And the odds are astronomical. And then it just turns out that a Capitol Police officer lived next door to the subject that I was surveilling just 1 week after January 6th. And I'll just tell you guys, if you ask me how long would it take the FBI to find somebody starting completely cold on a brand new case, a week is a pretty good amount of time for them to be able to identify somebody in the right vicinity of. Maybe they get the landlord of that person. Maybe they get the neighbor. But it happens that about a week is how long it takes to run down somebody. Boston Marathon bombing was about 5 days. Charlie Kirk story, about three. You know, depending on how much you have to go on, a week from a complete dead stop is what I would expect of the FBI. And then it completely goes cold for 5 years.
So there's a couple big pieces here. They don't get out of this now. It's obvious to the general public. So you have the operation run of the Democrats clearly before. Now you have the FBI that had all this info and them currently, you know, obviously sitting on it and running defense behind the scenes trying to get us to stop talking about it. And then where does this go? So we have who's actually guilty? Why won't the current people in the administration go after him? And then where do you see it going? Both of you, go ahead.
I'll sit for a second. I want to hear.
Joseph McBride.
So, well, we look at this from the top down. We know that Nancy Pelosi stood in the way of President Trump getting the National Guard there. We know that the Capitol Police were mismanaged and were half-staffed that day. We know that the fences were taken down. We know that the pipe bomber put the pipe bomb there beforehand. This is coordination. This is collusion. This is a top-down, from the top all the way to the bottom. We know that this is what's going on. Now, what is the unfortunate reality about government? The unfortunate reality about government and about institutions is that they historically take care of themselves. They put themselves and they put the machine above the American public. The whole point in getting President Trump back into office, quite frankly, time one and time two, was to undo that machinery, was to say that we have a man, we have a president who loves the American people above the machine, above the swamp, and he's willing to do whatever it takes. Now, I firmly believe that he is the man, but I have questions about the current FBI's administration, about the current DOJ. Do they have the stuff? Do they have the salt? Do they have the Constitution to set aside their pride, to set aside their institution, and to internally go after the people who are culpable and responsible? If those people are identified, they can be brought up on terrorism charges. There's no doubt about it. Obstruction of justice.
Exactly. And then their boss is above them. Well, exactly. So here's what I'm saying is, keep going, but this is just so crazy. I will tell the FBI this. If you want to reform yourself, do your job. People want to see the right thing done. Why have the new administration connect itself? But Kyle predicted this when Trump first got reelected. He said, no, the institutions will cover up for themselves. So, but regardless, if I was a cold-blooded, even evil person, I would say, no, the public wants revolution. I would give them what they want. It's like, this is stupid from every angle.
I agree with you, Alex. Look, when you look at what Cash Patel and what Pam Bondi are focused on right now, it's not this. They're doing other good work, saving children, nothing more important. Stopping drugs and fentanyl coming into our country, very important. But this is right up there because this strikes at the heart of our democracy, the heart of our ability
to function. The attempted coup they blamed on us. Well, yeah, going back to Kyle Serafin, I totally agree. I remember Bongino was like, oh, J6, investigate. Now he's like, oh, I don't want to look at it. In fact, you've got the backstory on that. I mean, Bongino's like the guy that puts the fires out now.
Yeah, it's worse than that. I mean, these guys are actively obstructing. They created a whole new Twitter account called FBI Rapid Response, which hasn't responded in a couple of days, it turns out. And apparently the entire purpose of that was to put out fast information and be able to be flexible and, you know, respond to things. Well, how about you respond to the allegation that a member of the Capitol Police who now works at the CIA has been identified by the Blaze as the pipe bomber? That seems like a pretty important thing to address to the public. That's what I would think is relevant. And here's some other things. The boyfriend of that woman is a Capitol Police officer. Now, here's the backstory that doesn't make any sense. Again, I got assigned to a doorway to watch out and look for a person who was known as Person of Interest 3 in the pipe bomb summary that Loudermilk's committee put out. It's Barry Loudermilk.
And by the way, they put out disinfo claiming you weren't. Now they've had to admit you were. They're like, why is Sarah in the middle of this? That's what they assigned you to. So that's how fate works.
Well, here's,
but that's confirmed you did this.
Well, yeah, that's the best part of it. They were out there and they were having the spin doctors try to say, well, Serafin's mistaken. If he said it, it must be untrue. No, no, no. There's documentation on everything the FBI does. Anyone who's ever worked with the FBI knows that the actual thing they teach you at the academy is if it's not written down, it didn't happen. It happened. It was written down. There's surveillance logs. They're out there.
Well, so people say, what do you know about J6? I was there. You were too. So just people saying, like, it's weird. We're there. No, we were there. Fate had that way.
So there were three people that were identified in these reports, and they were identified apparently by that way. But I don't recall that, because what they do when they give us a target to do surveillance is they tell us a name, an address, a date of birth, a car. You know, they'll give us a license plate and they say, go there and watch this person. And here's what we think they may have done. So see what you find. Take pictures, follow them around, do your thing. That's what we did. And I did this professionally for 3 years. So is it the most prestigious thing to do in the world? No, it's really like a patience exercise. But this one was extremely weird because we were there for only 2 days. I would say that the pipe bomb case of January 6th was maybe the most terroristic thing that could have happened. And it was one of the more terroristic things that happened in the terrorism world where I worked, because we watched a lot of like supposed terrorists. And when you watch the so-called terrorists, you expect them to do something terroristic, but they never had any bombs. They almost never had any guns. They usually were like some, you know, lonely guy who hung out in his mom's basement and ate Hot Pockets and, you know, put some racist memes up or something. So this was a real big deal. They pulled us in 2 days and they pulled us away from someone that was identified as called person number three. And so the story that the Blaze has identifies the previous one talked about person number three being the house that we watched. Directly next door to person number three is the person that they've identified as their subject. They think was the person that dropped the pipe bombs. And that makes a lot of sense when you realize that they also were looking at a person called person number two. So for people who are listening from the outside and you're like, who the hell are these people? Person number one is the pipe bomber. That's what the FBI called him. Person number two was a person of interest that may have been an accomplice of the pipe bomber. And person number three was the person who owned the house that we were sitting at. The story officially from Loudermilk's committee, which is recently clarified by the FBI, was that person number two, the potential accomplice, was actually a guest staying with person number three, who I was watching. And I sent you guys a picture that comes from the whistleblower disclosure that nobody else has. It's a couple of members of Congress and a couple of members of independent media have this. So there's a picture and it says, this is the one on the left. That is the person in the hood. It's grainy. It's a surveillance footage. It's pulled from some footage that came out of somewhere that the FBI was looking. And they identified this as person number two. On the right-hand side of the screen right now is the boyfriend of Shawnee Kirkhoff, who's also a Capitol Police officer. What the FBI came to believe is the person on the left, as you guys look at this, and I'm interested in your reaction too, that person is supposed to be a 62-plus-year-old man who's 5'10 or 5'11 and was visiting the Capitol from the South and hanging out with his friend.
He looks like he's about 33 years old and doesn't look like a 60-something-year-old man.
Doesn't look like anything like a 60-something-year-old man. Like, I mean, I'm already starting to get gray. I'm in my early 40s, so I don't know how... I don't know a lot of guys that are in their 60s that don't have some gray in their beard. And... you know, this is the claim that they made. That comes directly from the FBI's release.
Sure, and we got to have you guys back. I know you're a very busy call with your show's exploding. You're batting 1,000. You know, so is Joseph McBride. We go to 5 after next segment. I know you guys got to go, and then JR takes over. But what about my other question, which is the big one, I think, here? I mean, this is case closed now. They're all over. It's ridiculously obvious. Correct me if I'm wrong. What do they do now to cover this up? I don't see what's going to happen now, because we're not going to shut up. I mean, folks, this is smoking gun stuff. We can talk about Kirk and weird stuff all day or Epstein all day. Those lead to dead ends. This is ridiculously obvious, or am I wrong?
I think you're right. I think there's no way you cover it up. And by the way they wanted to cover it up, they wanted to call it a training exercise. I'll throw it back to you guys, but they tried to call it a training exercise. There's no such thing as a training exercise.
You predicted that.
Yeah, of course. And here's the thing. We have this thing. It's a concept in psychology called illusory truth. If you repeat something enough, you believe it, including if you believe like the lie that you said, hey, the government's going to lie to us and tell us it's going to be a training exercise. And then you start saying that enough times that when they say, well, how are we going to cover this up? You're like, we could call it a training exercise. That's what I used to think it would be. So that's what these guys came up with. They actually had this plan.
Well, sometimes I think what they were trying to debunk is giving them ideas, too.
The thing is, you can't call it a training exercise because every training exercise involves what's called deconfliction. And that's when you reach out to the other law enforcement
equities. Let everybody know. I'm not even a cop or FBI guy like you or a lawyer. But yeah,
that's right.
you tell everybody we're doing a drill. I mean, you know, you don't do a drill.
Right. And then the last part of it, Alex,
kill you.
Just, It's super simple. You know that it's not a training exercise because 5 years later, they still have a $500,000 reward for the arrest, capture, and conviction of this person. And they didn't ever pull it and go, hey, our bad. We finally found the email.
I've seen training exercises. When they do a bomb, they block the roads off.
That's right.
So what happens now, Joseph McBride?
It's an interesting question. My gut reaction thus far is they haven't addressed it. I wonder if they're just going to try to let it die. I suppose at some point they're going to, if their position is that they're not going to address it, they will just count on us punching ourselves out, that we're just going to run out of steam, that we're going to stop talking about it, that people like you are going to stop covering it, Alex, that Kyle will stop talking about it, other people will stop talking about it. It will become yesterday's news. It will become unimportant.
Okay, well, they had grand juries tried to indict me for this, and they put my co-host in prison, so I'm not letting it go.
Good, you shouldn't. You should never let it go. It should never be letting go. Look, we never let JFK go either, right? We still want answers for that. But this is, you know, the deep state in the United States government here who, quite frankly, doesn't admit any wrong. Look, there's a whole body of wrongful conviction litigation. People go to jail for 20, 30, 40 years, and they get millions of dollars. And in those sentencing hearings, when the prosecutors and the government is clearly wrong, they don't even apologize. Their position when it comes to all of this is we're always right. We never say that we're wrong. Deal with it. And if you think we got it wrong, take us to court and sue us, and you'll have to pay for that litigation to happen. Otherwise, sit down and shut up. Again, we got a good guy who loves this country named Donald Trump, who leads this country right now. He's got to put his boot on the neck of people who are under him and say, get this done. Make this a top priority.
Well, I totally agree. That was my answer, but I want to hear from you and Kyle first. And I can get a hold of Trump. It'll get to him. But when Trump learns about this, and I've heard he's already heard about it, but hear about the stuff last week, he's going to go crazy. Kyle Serafin, because he knows they're trying to hang around his neck. Trump has got, this is a real litmus test for his DOJ and his FBI, isn't it, Kyle?
I would think so. And here's the thing he's got to realize. He campaigned on the idea, you know, that they're coming for you, but I'm the thing in the way. I don't think that was complete at the time. I think that there were a lot of J6ers that also took some of those bullets. And were there people that were in the crowd on January 6th that needed to go to jail and fought a cop and, you know, they brought pepper spray or whatever it was? Like they broke laws. There are certain people.
But in general, that certainly it was a setup. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But there were a lot of people that took like an unguided tour of the Capitol on that day, got involved in zero violence, and they didn't cross anything that they didn't know they could cross. And then we had people lose their lives over this. They took their own lives, whether it be on the police side or whether it be on the actual, you know, so-called rioter side or the trespassers, as my buddy calls them, misdemeanor terrorists, that walked around and they looked down the barrel of government prosecution and they said, I can't fathom going to prison, so I'm done. So families have been ripped apart. The trust of military veterans and law enforcement professionals and just regular people who paid their taxes for decades, it's been shattered. So Trump's got to come in and fix that problem.
They're trying to create a domestic terror purge off of this and this theology or this fable, this legend. To me, I'm sorry for all the victims, everybody, and I'm a victim too of it. But I mean, the bigger deal is it goes right to the top of the Democrats, the deep state. That's why I wanted is to bring them down. I mean, I'll just say it right now. I'll tell the victims I've supported people who are put in prison, supported their pardons, all of it. But for me, the big enchilada here is this could be the string that pulls the whole sweater apart, right?
One would think, let me add this little thought, and you guys reflect on this maybe. Whenever we look at the way that wars are fought, one of the major critiques that people have of generals is that they're always trying to fight this war with tactics that were successful in that war. In other words, whatever used to work, that's what they... So we're always fighting the last war in the current war until we get up to speed. And the war on terror was no exception to that. So a lot of people who understand how that plays, they're using old tactics. I actually think they're doing the same thing in the narrative war and the media war right now. They're hoping that they can squash this, like Joseph just said, that they can just ignore it and let us punch ourselves out, or that the leaving the oxygen away from the fire is going to make it go away. And they released the story on Amelia Earhart the other day and her last known transmissions, like somehow that's going to placate people. And they're going to go and like cats after the laser pointer. They're going to go after the shiny dot on the ground. And that's not the media environment we're in right now. And that's not the American people. We have a very fast-paced, but also a really diligent group of people that are not going to just say, well, you said the Epstein's files are no big deal, so we're done with them. Nope. It's not on Fox News, so it's over. Nope. There are so many independent journalists. There are so many people that have independent streams of information.
They don't control the narrative anymore.
You cannot get away from people's interest, and they will find that thread. And this one is not going to go away. The pipe bomb story has always been ridiculous. They found grandmas. They found dudes who had like a strange earlobe in Arkansas because he stood next to a flagpole, and they were able to put that guy in prison. But they can't find someone who left physical evidence, you know, theoretically viable explosive devices in the Capitol. I don't believe it. And no one else does either, because the FBI is not that incompetent. They never have been.
Yeah. Now, the owner of Bigley is Nate Hughes. He literally tried to save a woman they were beating to death. They admitted it. And then he got, you know, he got pardoned by Trump. They found him off his earlobe because he was wearing a mask.
It's unbelievable. One of the good things about the time that we live in, and this was evidenced during the January 6th saga, was before we really got those tapes released, it was just the old quintessential, the media proffering a one-sided narrative to the public that this was an insurrection, that this is what happened, so on and so forth. After we got the first three-hour block of video footage out there, and then more video came, the American citizens, social media people took up arms. And what do I mean by that? They fought a guerrilla warfare on the internet against the mainstream media by popping up on Twitter, by popping up on Instagram, by popping up on Facebook and posting clips everywhere, making the truth unignorable, making the truth so viral, so overwhelmingly in your face that the mainstream media and that the government was forced to confront it. And that's now, you're the in only the key. Way
the left tried to motivate all their disinfo operatives, but we organically did it. What you're saying is it's the info war now. The people have to understand, I mean, out of all the investigations, Colin, am I wrong? And you too, Ms. McBride. I mean, this could bring down the whole Democratic Party. I mean, they're I bet they're sweating. I think it's clearly connected to Pelosi not running again. What do you think, Kyle?
I mean, there was a very incidental moment when Steve Baker said he was going to drop his story, and the next morning, Nancy Pelosi said that she was going to retire. So that's worth knowing. The second thing is that the Capitol Police works for the Speaker of the House and also works for the Senate Majority Leader. So that's also relevant. Lastly, there was an update that was put out in January of this year, and I keep referring back to it because it's about 75 pages. It was put out by Barry Loudermilk's committee. Tom Massey was the subcommittee member on there. And I did a search this morning for the word unclear, because that's what they use. It's unclear why this thing happened. It's unclear how this investigation ended. It's unclear what happened to this particular lead. It's unclear, you know, what the FBI did on follow-up of this. It appears 14 times in that document. I'll put a Twitter thread out a little bit later that kind of gives people an insight of it. But some of the things that are unclear is how they didn't actually go after one particular ad ID that they were following, same stuff they use on the J6ers that moved around Washington, D.C. They identified it by March. It's unclear what happened to that lead. There's a couple of other things that are unclear that they couldn't figure out. And then the last thing that I thought was very interesting is they tracked 186 cell phones and they immediately excluded 51 of them because they were law enforcement or on the exclusion list. If the FBI's underlying assumption about the investigation into J6 was, we're going to exclude law enforcement phones, you already have your answer why they haven't found the person.
I was about to say, I'm not a rocket scientist or a star FBI agent like you, but you would not, you never even think of that, because obviously law enforcement's innocent. You search all phones, right? The fact that you think exclude law enforcement, that tells you right there, right?
12% of firefighters, or 12% of arsons are done by firefighters in this country, just for whatever that's worth.
But am I right that you would normally do a phone search, just do it all, right?
Yeah, you don't exclude anybody. They have to prove that they're not supposed to be there. Like, you exclude them once they've proven it.
2 minute break. I'm going to cover five more minutes with both of you guys. Closing comments. Amazing. Joseph McBride, McBride, New York City. We'll also give you a Kyle Serafin's side as well. This is so revolutionary. Everything we do is the tip of the spear. You are the tip of the spear when you spread the word, when you pray for us, when you buy products. So listen, we have shortfalls, and they're not even that big, but I understand the economy's totally shot. Our audience is as big as it's ever been, and back when the economy was going and we had an audience this big, we'd be in high cotton and I'd be able to expand. Right now, I'm just trying to stay on air. So I need you to make the decision to go to thealleyshowstore.com right now and take advantage of the biggest sale ever. Black Friday came early. That's right. Black Friday has come early. We always launch it the weekend after before Black Friday. Be a little different. Black Friday comes early. Mega sale, the biggest sale ever. Buy one, get one free on all supplements. The Irish Sea Moss, the Ultramethylene Blue, the Shilajit, the Bovine Colostrum, and dozens of other amazing products. This is the biggest sale we've ever done. It ends Friday, November 28th. buy any supplement and get any other supplement for free. Normally, it's buy one bottle of Irish Sea Moss, another bottle of Irish Sea Moss, or buy one bottle of Methylene Blue, get another bottle. No, this is add any supplement to your cart and get another supplement free. You can mix and match any of our amazing supplements together. Don't miss out. This offer ends Friday, November 28th. Visit theoxygenstore.com today and fuel your body, mind, and power the info war. Take advantage of this amazing deal while supplies last. And here's another little tidbit that makes this a total loss leader when you use it. If you go to alexjonesapp.com and download the Droid or Apple app for free, that are the top apps, just in the last few months we launched it, folks at Bigly, the Alex Jones channel, the Alex Jones network, it's the same shopping cart on the app, your desktop or phone. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top. So everybody should get the app and should definitely use that. But if you want to support us more and get more funds in, then don't use the app and get the additional 20% off. I'm serious. It's like a form of a donation. When I tell you that I need your support, it's absolutely critical. This is the most critical time.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.